This show is part of the Goblin Broadcast Network, mate. You probably knew that, though.
Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on.
Welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast.
On a spoon.
Are we discussing the attack of giant robots today?
Giant robots?
Cannibals?
There can be giant robots and cannibals.
But I haven't gotten to the giant robots yet. I've just still got the giant ants in EDF.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you can talk about the giant ants.
It's like them. Pony, half monkey monster?
Half pony, half monkey? Maybe you use too much monkey.
Nah, isn't it enough to know I ruined a pony?
Maybe you don't like monsters.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, it's... no, I like monsters.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think that chick did.
No, we're talking about, we're getting into our races, magic, and technology stuff. This is the end of our
world-building
series, at least for now, anyway, until
the muse
comes back.
Well, our world-building series has been somewhat
muted.
Spotted. But we are brand new at this.
Sort of our stream of consciousness type of podcast.
We should have a podcast about stream of consciousness.
Okay. When did you go all David Lynch on me, Jeremy?
Oh, when we were at On the Border.
We had the most horrible service I've ever had in an On the Border restaurant ever.
Yeah, that was pretty Smurfy. I'm not really sure about that.
The fact that he, you know, almost blatantly tried to tip Ethan's plate of food into Ethan's lap.
Yeah, he didn't clear off anything, and he was really into the guys behind us.
Yeah,
and the women that were across the way. He was so smurfing horny, he was trying to get them to go home with him.
Well, did you notice, though, the guys behind us, while they were jocks, you could tell by their tone, they were like, this guy's an idiot, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was sitting there being all friendly-like, and, ah, service! What's up with that?
Yeah.
It's about the attitude, too.
Now, of the three of us, I'm like the only one that listens to other podcasts regularly, but I do want to give a shout-out to Does My Geek Look Big in This, because they did officially announce that they are no longer on the air. They have locked their doors and are no longer doing the podcast, which sucks, because they were a lot of fun.
Did you ask them if we can have their location?
Well, they didn't really have a location there in Britain.
A castle?
No, I don't think it was a castle.
No, only Yogg-Sothoth Radio has a castle.
Yeah, well, no, Yogg Radio has Innsmouth House.
An Innsmouth House in England?
Yeah, so that's what he calls it, is Innsmouth House. Innsmouth House.
That's we have to go there.
No, we don't.
With Cthulhu.
We need to.
We do.
Yeah, we need to go. You can stay here and
stay here and not be horribly...
Paul can send back our remains.
Yes. That's another one we need to give a shout out to.
That's Paul from Yogg Radio, not Paul our Mansquito.
Paul Cthulhu.
So therefore...
Paul of Cthulhu,
Gamers Haven Podcast would be me and the, at first, unanimated remains of Nathan and Ethan.
And see,
soon to be animated.
And he's all not wanting to go over to the Innsmouth House, and he's talking about dark magic to raise us from the dead.
I'm already working on the Lich Hood. I mean, no.
There are good liches and bad liches. I mean, you have a lich that, you know, gives us lemonade.
Well, he's true. Awesome.
He was more not evil.
What's his name? Farmer Sebastian?
No, Farmer Samuel.
Farmer Samuel. His wife, Anne.
Who's... Nobody's quite sure. It's never been established if she knows she's a lich. Or if the retirement just goes on forever.
Yeah, and I'm not going to tell them. Anyway, they're going to smile, nod, accept their lemonade because they're nice folks.
Yeah, good folks.
So when you're going down the road and you run into a farmhouse and there's two farmers out front and they offer you lemonade,
just take it
and smile.
Be nice. Thank you. They might rip your heart out and eat you later, but they know.
As long as you be nice to them, they'll be nice.
They probably won't do that if you're nice to them.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, God, shut up. He's like, "What? When'd you get here?" Oh, Smurf. That was great.
That was amusing, yeah.
You're not supposed to be here.
And he goes, oh, Smurf. It's like something out of, you know, fighting the Emperor and Star Wars.
I have the power.
No, I don't think it was He-Man.
No!
You think He-Man would do well in Star Wars?
Hey, that was... Look at the back of the box on that movie. It said it was the Star Wars of the 80s.
Oh, my God.
Star Wars was in the 80s! You know how
exactly.
bad He-Man the movie was?
Terrible!
It was so bad.
And Ethan has it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, it's buyable.
Of course I have it.
It's buyable.
This version doesn't have the quota. The VHS version, if you ever find the VHS version of Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella, there's a quote on the back of it from, you know, like one of the movie reviewers' quotes, and it says, "The Star Wars of the 80s. And I just always thought that was hilarious.
You know, it's probably funny. That guy is probably no longer a critic.
Probably.
We should come up with a list of various movie quotes like that. Just horrible movie quotes.
Like good scene transitions on the back of... Of a Battlefield Earth from Joe Blow's Video Emporium. The only good thing anyone could find about that awful film.
I should do a review on that film.
Why? I want my
Have
brain
you actually
in
seen
one
the movie?
I put it in once at work.
I watched that right after I watched Wing Commander.
Man, you were going for a suicide pact, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Wing Commander at least was far superior.
Yeah.
With Freddie
And that was sad because it was awful.
I just can't believe, what is it, John Travolta?
Yeah, John Travolta.
He did that movie.
Oh, well, you know, it's that whole Scientology craziness.
That doesn't even have anything to do with the movie. The book and the movie have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because the book is like 6,000 pages long.
Well, Scientology is another conversation on another podcast.
We're not going to talk about that.
No, that
I don't want the Scientologist breaking down a door going, you must come with us, and trying to brainwash us.
One of us! One of us!
Because,
one
you know,
of us!
As much as a pacifist as I am, I really don't want to have to pull out a shotgun and start killing people.
Well, I just have difficulty.
Well, technically Scientologists aren't people, are they?
No.
Sure. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes they are in the closet, too.
Yeah. So I pulled out my gun.
We should put a link on for that.
Yeah. One, I'm gonna pop someone. Two, I'm gonna cap this smirk. Three.
I need to listen to the whole series.
It was like Good Times with Weapons.
There's a midget in it. I think he has a gun.
Midgets with guns are good, though.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be back after this with our... we're going to dive into wonderful discussions.
He-Man rules!
He-Man does rule.
That's true.
He has the power.
I have the power! I would
never need to use skeletal.
That's something.
Put down your weapon. You have 20 seconds to comply.
Hello, gamers out there, everyone. This is Peter Adkiss, and I cordially invite you to come to Gen Con Indianapolis, August 16 to 19 at the Indianapolis Convention Center for our 40th anniversary, the biggest party yet for gamers.
Come, son of Jor-El, kneel before Zod! Snitchy boochies.
But magic and technology. I think we pointed out in an earlier podcast that I think the two are very similar, depending on how you use it. Because you have, you know, running around in modern day, you can have a flamethrower. Running around in fantasy setting, you have a fireball.
Or Agnazar's Scorcher.
Agnazar's Scorcher.
Agnazar's
cool,
is
pronounced.
Yeah. I don't know how it's pronounced. I just always pronounce it Agnazar's, but I don't know. I'm an idiot, so...
What was that quote you said about magic and technology? I think it was Q that said it. No, it wasn't Q. Who was it?
Puck from Gargoyles. Energy is energy, whether it comes from magic, from science or sorcery. That was the quote, and that's how I've always looked at it. It's two sides of the same coin. There was a great cartoon back in the 80s that I saw called Flight of Dragons, based on a book, and it sort of dealt with magic and technology in the same way. As science became more accepted and more prevalent, magic faded away, and it's sort of like the two are, I always sort of look at like the two are
flip sides
of the same sort of, you know, the same scale. Whereas, you know, they can be balanced, or one can be way more than the other, and the other is not looked at. I always sort of thought it was an interesting way to look at it, especially if you're building a world. Everyone automatically thinks like a Dungeons and Dragons type world is, you know, medieval Europe, where you have, you know, horses and carriages and all that crazy stuff. But it's like you also have magic. So, Jeremy, you did it well in your world with the gates, I thought. With the, you know how it's, you have gates that will transport you around the world and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's the same sort of token as you know, of having, taking a plane ride, you know?
No.
Yes.
When you get into a plane, it's a giant piece of metal that might get you through the air.
When you walk into a gate, it's a big ring of metal that might get you where you're going.
Yeah. Well, true.
But is it different?
On my world, they're going to be more willing to...
Less fire and blood on one, if it screws up.
If it screws up, you'll either, one, end up in Dranil's realm, or two, you just won't end up anywhere.
You just vanish.
It is. I mean, it is basically the same thing in a lot of ways, though the power sources may be different, or they may not. I mean,
yeah,
are we
that's how you
want to
go. I mean, it's how D&D handled psionics. Is, you know, it's like you can have psionics be the same as magic, just a different way of going about it, or you can have it be totally something else.
Yeah, you do have to break it down. You have psionics, you have arcane magic, divine magic. Mm-hmm. You have to, druidic magic is officially divine, but it comes from a different source. It comes from nature.
The shamanistic magic. Yeah. I always kind of liked how Slayers actually split it up, as you had, what was it, black magic, elemental magic, and white magic.
But
that's how they split it up. And Guardians of Order Slayers D20 game, the only good D20
so
thing
far,
that's,
yeah.
Well, Guardians of Order is gone.
But that doesn't mean there won't be other
anime D20 games. Oh yeah.
In the future.
So far, I mean, they put out 3 of them. It was the best one.
Trigun.
Well, and we have so you have to decide where it's going to come from. But also, if it all comes from one source or it works the same, that's going kind of in a balance. Yeah, one mm-hmm. thing is more going. There's more technology than Magic, or the other way. Well, how about in White Wolf,
mm-hmm.
where it's opposing.
Right, where you have the different spheres.
Diametrically opposed.
Of the spheres of magic, yes. I always liked how Mage of the Ascension actually worked with that. And how
it would probably work more like that in real life.
Yeah, it was actually very cool. Where you had... now, we're talking Mage of the Ascension, not Mage of the Awakening, because I really don't like the new White Wolf stuff. The old Mage had Correspondence, Prime...
Thaumaturgy.
Well...
They had Correspondence, Entropy, Forces, Life, Matter, Mind, Prime, Spirit, and Time.
Yeah. Which time and mind? Oh my god. But
mind where you can
the one problem game wise is there's so much there that you can do.
Oh yeah.
I like the
It's
controls.
The altering of reality, you know, with magic and whatnot. And actually how Mage of the Ascension did a good job of looking at it is you had the technocracy who also did their own ways of magic but through technology. And even some of the traditions in Mage did it that way too, like the Sons of Aether and the Virtual Adepts, those guys. And then you had the more mystical ones like the
Order
of Hermes, that's what I was thinking of. And they're like the Verbena.
They're more Egyptian style, and the more natural ones.
Yeah.
That's probably how it would work in like a real life type setup. But
if magic was something.
But
that
the problem
done.
Was, which is another podcast.
Like magic is a force of will, basically. Yeah. Is how Mage the
Ascension. Which is how I do magic in my world. There's Earth magic, which is different from Druid magic.
Yeah.
And then there's will magic, which is what most spellcasters do. And then there's divine. Magic.
I've always liked how when you deal with magic is one of the things that I like to do. That I think D&D doesn't do very well is the splitting of the magics. Jeremy just touched on it there, but the you know how I think if you're a wizard, you really shouldn't know a heck of a lot about divine magic, and if you're a cleric, you should know a heck of a lot about wizard magic or druidic magic.
Well, unless you study.
Study it, obviously. But
just a normal cleric, the cleric's going to learn different aspects of casting, and a cleric. Or a priest is going to need the divine will to help because they're basically, and this is something they didn't really go, they talk about, but you're learning spells, or not spells, excuse me, you're learning prayers as a priest.
Right.
You're not quite learning, these prayers and rituals, I mean, they're like spells.
Right.
But that's why I kind of was pushing more towards my Templars.
Mm-hmm.
Because that makes more sense to me.
Right.
The priest, the way they have it, is basically just a conduit. Basically
mm-hmm.
says, I want to do this. My God has given me the way of doing this. Channeled through my flimsy little body. Well, while mages, they have the power of the word. The power of the word locks the spell into their mind. And they release it. That's why the spell is actually disappearing. Because they're releasing that. It's not that they don't know the spell per se. It's not like the spell disappears and it's forever gone. It's the energy that they're trapping in. That was something we argued about a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it was so simplistic. And I'm like, no, but that's not how I see it for the D&D setting.
Mm-hmm.
They're not saying that your mage sits down with this book. He knows what his magic missile spell is.
Right.
He knows the ritual, but when he rereads it, when he focuses on it, he is putting that spell through those words, those gestures, and arcane foci,
uh-huh.
or materials, into his mind. And then he releases it. So it's not like the spell disappears, he doesn't know it, he forgets it, he just can't use the energy again.
Because he's already dissipated.
He's already used the energy. So it is kind of a will thing, but it's also a word thing and a material thing.
It's by sheer force of will that they store the magic.
but also the materials that he uses help either one help the will or a part of the magic.
The way I look at it is it is the force of the will that allows the magic to be to become, you know, usable. What the components do in the hand movement, the somatic, you know, the somatic parts, what those do is those increase the effects. It's like you throw a fireball through force of will, you throw a fireball, it's this big. You throw in the bat dung, it becomes huge because, well, you know, bat dung is incredibly combustible. So you've created this massive fireball by using the actual component. The spell would still go off if you didn't have the supplies. It just wouldn't be, it wouldn't work. You'd be like, oh, look, a little fireball hit the ground, and oh, my toe has been scorched for half a point of damage.
On how I look at it, though, the mages in the past, they worked out these rituals, and it's always worked this way. And for some reason, for whatever reason, magic continues to function this way. I'm talking about arcane magic.
I'm talking about arcane magic, too.
So that if you don't use those material components, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Unless you have that feat. The, there's a feat that allows you to not use most material components.
Issue materials?
Yes. Great feat.
Yeah.
Because if
well,
not,
it's, D&D does a great job using the metamagic feats and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Even the craft item feats are good. You know,
they are.
Despite what Robin says, I like the craft item feats.
Well, her thought on it is, why are you... Okay, when they talk about experience points, a lot of people look at it, well, I'm losing my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem with the experience point tables is your experience is knowledge, but it's also your life force.
Yeah.
And it's hard to control.
Well, it's putting a number to where you're at, and I never really liked
that's
how that
why
worked.
I like the experience points debt, or I've decided with
well, even with different games like Deadlands.
Yeah.
I love how the Deadlands XP works. It's the fate chips you get.
Yeah.
And you can either hold on to them and use them in game, or you can cash them in for XP.
Yeah.
I always liked how that worked.
Well, and there are alternate ways of doing magical items that take hit points, take con points. There's one that's very interesting that basically you can only create up to so many items.
Is that stuff out
box.
Of Unearthed Arcana?
No.
No?
It's another book, which the name of it, it's a random company. It's this random book I picked up, but it talks about different spell creation. Mm-hmm. But I've gone ahead and decided that. And these are all things you need to think about, by the way, for your magic system, for your world. I've decided potions and scrolls no longer need your life force, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
If you're making a magic ring, you are putting part of you in there. I mean, that's just, you're putting part of your will in there. Am I going to make it... I never would force anyone to use so much XP that it makes some level down.
Right.
Basically, they can't use the item. Where they go into debt. That's I would never make somebody say, well, I want to make this magic ring, but it's going to drop me a level by 20 experience points or something. No, that's silly. That's stupid.
Right.
But I see what Nathan's saying about Arcane. That's very interesting. I like that idea, too. It's different than the one I use, but it's
well, like spell ingredients and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually wanted to use an idea somewhat based on
that. The spell ingredients amplify
the
effects.
There are some stuff like that.
There are some systems, actually. Monty Cook developed one. It's in Arcane Evolved, mm-hmm. and other. There are also other things.
And Arcane
where you can use
one,
yeah, where you can use specific components to actually amplify uh-huh. spells. And it's not just like the bat guano for the fireball. It's you have that, but you also go out and find another substance, the special gem powder
horns,
and stuff like that, that will do something else to the
Which,
spell.
That's not something I'm going to bring up with my players. It's up to the players to ask.
Yeah. I always thought that was a cool idea. It's very much more customizable. You had a lot more to it, it made it more important to go out and find materials.
But you have to make sure that you're not turning your campaign, though, into just a monster killing for their parts, though.
Yeah.
Because, I'm sorry, if a GM does say that to me, and I'm playing a mage, or even if I'm not playing a mage, the first, depending on the character I'm playing, the first thought is, I need to go kill some monsters.
Mm-hmm.
This is a way to make money. And while that's... Because a low-level character, you know, they don't have any money.
Oh, yeah. thing realistically is there would be people who would go out and hunt these things for it.
So maybe players should be
looking rare then.
Yeah, and or you know, you have to extract it in a certain way, or various things. Like, hey, well, we need the bile of this monster. Well, here, I brought this bile. Well, that won't work. Sorry, it's been contaminated. You didn't extract it right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Some of the monsters you go after, you couldn't go after.
Like, hey, we need the dragon bile. Well, we're screwed. Because we're level 3.
But you do have to break down, you have to break down where your magic comes from, how it's going to work, how people use it.
Because there is a difference. On the way of the society.
Exactly. And there is a complete difference between a sorcerer and a mage.
Oh, yeah.
There's a complete difference between a psionicist and a mage, or a cleric.
I mean, you don't want to go too overboard. Like when I first did the whole sorcerer thing, where sorcerers could take any spells except off of domain lists, I thought it was a good idea, but then it just got to be too much. Where you just had, it's just too many spells to look through. D&D has that problem. Which is one of the reasons I actually like the Mage of the Ascension way of doing it is you have your spheres of influence, and then it's whatever fits in that sphere. It's like, hey, I want to turn that chair into something. Well, you have to have matter to do that.
Excuse me. That's is the problem with the D&D setting. There are too many spells, and that's why I break it down to very simple. Unless I have the book, you don't get the spell. And next, also, I will take most of my spells just out of basic books, because it's easier that way. But if a player comes in and I don't have that book, that spell is not going to work. Now, if a player wants to buy me that book, I'll quite willingly.
Yeah, I'm pretty content to have the spell compendium pretty much be it.
Yeah.
Then add in others. And one of the things I'm working on for my next D&D campaign, which is a ways off, is the different spell lists, but use different books. Like, because I also have the Complete Book of Eldritch Might, and maybe use that just for sorcerers. Say, if you're a sorcerer, you pick spells out of this book. If you're a wizard, you pick spells out of the spell compendium.
Yeah.
If you're a druid, you pick spells out of here, you know, whatever.
I'm pretty
just because I like that kind of variety and the difference in the different magic that is there. So because it's like, well, we also have to deal with some players that go, oh, he's casting this spell, so I know what to do now.
Though, if that's the case, they need to be making some spellcraft checks.
Yes.
And they better be passing those, or their players.
And to their defense, you know, I think it's good as a GM to describe your magic, or as even a player to describe your magic. You know, don't just say, I cast a fireball. Well, you know, it's try to be a bit more descriptive about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty open when it comes to sorcerers, but I also put it on the players to make sure they have their spells down.
Right.
Because, there's a lot to choose from, but they're only going to be casting limited spells.
Mm-hmm.
Clerics...
And paladins, I would say. I would sort of lump how paladins do their magic in with clerics. They're conduits for their god.
Yeah. And there's so many paladins or priest spells. That's why if somebody wants to play a priest but not worry too much about it, I say go with the Templar. Just because it's a lot simpler.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't mess with...
Well, I'm playing the cloistered cleric in yours, you know, and I have the huge spell lists, but, you know, I deal with that.
Yeah, because you chose to do that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for some people, it's like, oh, God, that's too many spells.
And really quick on the cleric thing is my brother made a comment the other day. I was talking to him about his Tallis campaign. And he said something about his fiance, Eunice, is playing a cleric because no one else would. And a lot, and even in World of Warcraft, it happens. Is the, you know, you guys mentioned it, was how... clerics just sort of get the short end of the stick, and a lot of people don't like playing a cleric. A lot of people look at it like, well, okay, no one's playing it, I guess I'll play the cleric this time.
You can't do that. You have to make the cleric... Because clerics don't have to be a healing machine.
No. It helps that they are, but yeah, I mean, like in your game, I am the healing machine, but I've built him to be the healing machine.
Yeah.
But, and I understand that. It's like... I have to get used to the... I mean, especially in D&D, you want to have a character that's going to be awesome in combat. It's going to run in and kick everyone's smurf, you know?
Yeah.
But you have you have to have those characters that are going to be like, okay, like, I had to step back and go, okay, I could cast this attack spell. No, wait, okay, no, I need to really heal the other party members to keep them up, because that will make this battle go better, because if I go in there and swing, and I'll be slaughtered.
But there's also something that a lot of clerics forget about. A god is more likely to answer a prayer of their priest
mm-hmm.
than they are some random Joe Schmo on the street.
Right.
So, I'm not saying... Now, you better have a good reason for it. You don't go around and say, oh, I stubbed my toe, I need to call out to my god. But I'm all for a priest doing that once in a while. If it's that bad, the god is more likely to look at you and go, oh, well, I can do something. It might be
yeah.
minor. Maybe I'm just going to give you, like, 10 extra hit points. Something that people forget about priests, though, and how any holy classes, a god at any time can just stop giving spells.
Yeah.
See the arcane and the sorcerers and the psionicists?
Yeah, people think about it much more in terms of with paladins than with priests, but yes.
Yeah, if you don't follow the god's tenets, and it's...
Hey, I'm passing out pamphlets for Rune Lords,
yeah.
buddy. I mean...
But it could be some...
I'm both Rune Lords happy.
And a player and a character might not even know why at
yeah.
first. Suddenly their spells just stop coming and they're like, what did I do? Well, because some religions have so many rules.
Yeah. Well, it's like Deadlands. Going back to Deadlands, I love how the magic works in Deadlands. With faith-based characters, you have your three different types of magic in Deadlands. You have the arcane magic, which is through the hucksters. And then you have the divine magic through the blessed. And then you have the shamanistic magic through the Indian shamans. There are other magics in the game, but those are the three main ones. There's also like black magic and voodoo and Chinese magic. It sort of goes kind of nuts, but... With faith magic, with clerical magic, and holy magic, because you have, depending on the religion you go with, so check out the Fire and Brimstone book. It lists out different religions like Episcopalians, Mormons, things like that, and each religion has its own sinning table. And if you sin, if you go against the pretext or the words of that religion, well, bad things are going to happen. You're going to start losing your abilities to cast mm-hmm. spells. Because you've gone against the precepts of that religion, and it depends on what religion you're in. It doesn't go into the game never really goes into which religion is right, because, well, who cares? But I always liked that you have to, it's like put up or shut up. It's the before you preach what you practice what you preach sort of mentality.
And that's something, if you're going to play divine magic, a player needs to remember that.
Yeah.
It's not what they want.
It's what their god wants.
It's what,
because you've chosen to be a cleric, you've chosen to channel the magics of your god,
mm-hmm.
and you have to follow that law.
By the rules.
You have to follow your divine law.
And there could be purification rules, there could be all sorts of simple things. It could be as simple as, well, you didn't bathe quick enough after going through that, sewer or whatever.
Right.
Because as a priest, you have to be clean. You have to be purified.
Right. Or it could be a sort of a ritual you have to go through. Go back to the social rituals,
mm-hmm.
Or you have to, like, be baptized every 2 years
yeah.
or something like
you
that.
You can't kill.
Can't kill,
that's,
right.
Some priests, that makes it a little bit difficult.
Yep.
But it's still doable in an adventuring party. You're keeping your friends alive. Does that mean you can't cast offensive magic? Not necessarily. There's nice little feats that allow you to turn that into non-lethal.
Right. Nothing subtle damage.
Basically, all of this about magic is you need to figure out, one, the source. Two, you need to figure out how you're going to break it apart.
Mm-hmm.
Does it all come from one place? Does it come from different places? Is it used differently? Is it just will and the material components allow you to increase the magic? Are material components, you have to have them for arcane magic? Do priests have to have their holy symbols? Do they not? Do psionicists need focus? Is psionics different than magic? Is it the same? All of this stuff is important. We've talked a little bit about, in previous podcasts, I believe, about the effect of magic on society, but that's very important. Because magic is going to change how people think.
Magic in its own right is technology, in my opinion. Where you have...
It's another side of the coin.
It is. Well, you think, like I keep telling people, it's like you think about it, you have, in modern day, you have buses, you have electricity, you know, it's like, well, where a wizard would cast a light spell, oh wait, you have a flashlight. It's the same effect, it's just doing it in different ways.
Well, let's talk about the technology side, right. And then we'll talk about combining the two.
Right. Technology goes into manufacturing and is a much more accepted form of magic in its way, because if you take, you know,
well, it's
a flashlight.
Here.
Yeah, accepted here.
It might not be accepted elsewhere.
Right.
Because technology, I mean, yeah, we know technology. It's the easiest thing to know.
Sure. If you flip a switch, this happens. You press a button, this happens. It's technology. It's like if there's an owner's manual that tells you this is what should happen when you turn it on. You know.
Think of a D&D game where you take out the magic,
mm-hmm.
you put it in the far future, but the world itself and things like monsters are scientific experiments that have escaped and bred true.
Right.
And wizards are those individuals who are able to take the technology and use it.
It's the concept of the technomage.
Exactly.
From Babylon 5 did it.
Mm-hmm.
They had technomages who used technology to simulate magic. And they were still very mystical and very honored peoples.
Well, think about, you're walking into a cave, and you know if you light up these torches, it's going to cause a problem. It's a cave, all that smoke. So you turn to your mage, and he pulls out a wand. And switches some sort of magical thing. You might even say some arcane stuff. And suddenly a light beam comes out. It's just a flashlight.
Right.
It has charges. It has batteries.
Nope.
Is he going to tell you that? No.
Nope.
Does he even understand that? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
He may believe he has to say the arcane things. And the reason why his so-called magic doesn't work, even though its batteries are running out, is because, well, sometimes it doesn't. Or he didn't do the ritual right.
Or even he may have to say those words because the flashlight is voice activated.
Yeah, depending on how far in the future.
Right.
And
you can have a lot of fun with it.
Guns. I mean,
mm-hmm.
people might not understand. They understand the concept of projectiles, but they might not understand a gun. I'm talking a gun that you can't see the parts. I mean, take some of our guns or laser guns even.
Mm-hmm.
Laser guns are even
heck,
more.
Watch future weapons.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff on there that'll...
Think about sticking a laser gun with somebody, and he's like, it's voice or it's DNA activated.
Right.
Maybe maybe your wizards only come from one family.
Right.
The family doesn't understand it quite, but those laser weapons only work for them.
Right.
So when you need weapons, when you need fireballs, guess who do you go to?
You go to that family, because they're the only ones who can do
mm-hmm.
it. Yep.
Or potions.
And
in
that could
medicine.
That could be just how technology's advanced. There was never no one ever sat down to study it enough, or technology
society.
Or society has collapsed to the point where, well, I've always remembered that this family can do this, so
uh-huh.
we always have them do this.
If society would collapse right now.
Or it could be like Dune.
Well, yeah.
You know, that type of where you have your houses, the mm-hmm. like the House Atreides.
I look at it,
you know, whatever.
If society, let's say, okay, let's take Earth, move it ahead 100 years.
Right.
Technology advancing as fast as it is now continues passing.
Oh, yeah.
In 100 years, society collapses. Move it up 1,000 years. People are living, we're just saying for argument's sake, people are living like in a medieval type setting.
Right.
They're running around, they're doing normal, they're plowing their field. There's going to be caches. Think about the adventurers that find a cache of military guns
yeah.
and figure out how they clean it up. One of the coolest books, I believe was this called Orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, the orcs of this world discover this portal. And, no, I'm sorry, they discover the portal later. My mistake. They discover this dragon horde. The dragon has died. They go in. This dragon is a collector of military weapons from the multi-universe.
Mm-hmm.
He has tanks. He has machine guns. He has all this stuff. Orcs think it's magic.
Right.
But they use it. And they become the most advanced fighting force in the world.
It's the same concept of you have a wand of magic missile with 50 charges. Well, we also have an M16 with 50 rounds.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It would be interesting to run in that type of game as long as you made sure that each of those spell slots was like a technological... You can even call it a spell. But
yeah.
just allow it to be like maybe a magic missile is, I don't know, it's a pistol.
Yeah.
That only shoots so many things. But it would have to be mystical looking. It'd have to be different. Because once people start figuring out, well, I've got this crossbow and I've got this gun, bullet guns, those aren't too different. The gunpowder, yes. But really, but I'm talking like laser gun. That would work great.
Yeah.
Potions is medicine. I think it'd be neat. It really would.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's the two, I think, are more interchangeable than people realize.
And think about how, well, and how has technology changed our world?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look back 100 years from, look back, you know, 100 years ago, it was 1907. Well, it's now 2007. Look how far we've advanced
and
since then.
And think how advanced.
1907, we were just getting automobiles. Now we have hybrids.
We have spacecraft.
We have spacecraft.
And it's just going to continue.
We have these, you know, hydrogen fuel cars,
is so
planes.
Important. Because what happens when...
Satellites.
On your fantasy world, some... Whoever is... And it doesn't have to be a race, but a lot of times it turns out to be the gnomes... And that this always seems to be somewhat unfair.
Yeah, the gnomes are the dwarves generally yeah. is who they
but
end
what
up
happens
being.
When that when some person comes out with a combine?
Right. Or the
cotton steam powered.
You know?
Steam powered.
The steam powered cotton.
No magic.
Yeah.
It's cheaper to build.
Right. Well, it's the same thing as the look at the Industrial Revolution. Is we went from being primarily an agricultural society to being an industrial society, where society did a flip-flop. In an agricultural society, you had families that stayed at home and did the farming. You know, the mother did not go out and do farming. She stayed in with the kids and everything. You had, or no, actually the mother would go out and help in the fields. The kids would go out and help in the fields. Then and you stayed at home in rural areas, mm-hmm. where when the Industrial Revolution happened, everything became more urbanized.
Yeah, yeah.
You lived maybe out in a rural area, then you commuted to work, and you like the father, the husband, whatever, would go make earn the living while the mother was then thought to stay at home with the children.
Yeah,
we're still in that mindset now. And there is that flip, that dichotomy there. Yes. You have an agricultural society versus an industrial society.
Well, and you take into account gunpowder and mm-hmm. all that. And it would be interesting,
it's all part of industrialization.
To even just build a fantasy world without any magic, and not even do old technology. Just have it be a normal medieval society, but at that verge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because...
Well, go watch several of Akira Kurosawa's movies actually deal with themes like that as the end of the samurai.
Yeah.
Watch a movie like Yojimbo or The Seven Samurai, where you have the samurai and their way of life basically coming to terms with guns coming into the picture mm-hmm. and how one man with a rifle can be deadlier than a samurai who's trained with a sword all his life.
Yeah. Well, and also, in a world with magic...
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I never look at the big picture because I can't stand watching horror movies.
I try to avoid sitting here thinking of what to say next. I like to make it off the cuff, spontaneous. It doesn't work.
All I want now, and all I ever really wanted ever since I was a little kid, is total omnipotence. Is that too much to ask?
I could even get out on a limb of wild speculation. I know, pretty odd thing to do for this podcast. I could fit your brain in a hollow pea, I swear. That's just two clear cuts, two black and white. It's all point of view, don't you understand? It's point of view.
Oh, man! Every other podcast is better than mine!
That's enough. Whining time is over.
No doubt, if you were paying attention, you detected a minor tinge of paranoia.
But this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be doing this for fun. And if it means exhibiting false enthusiasm, I'm not above that. So I'm just going to apologize now and let's move on. So what specifically are you worried about, Adam? You would probably want to grab me around the neck with your arm and pull my head off. Did that make any sense?
Name's Ash. Housewares.
Well, today on the three-parter, Nathan's got a nice little rant. I've got character, and Jeremy is going to give us a nice review. So we'll kick it off with Nathan's rant.
The rant.
So about a month and a half ago, I was out shopping, and I on a whim went into a Blockbuster store, and they had this
foolish.
Cool, yeah, I know that now. They had this cool program they were doing for games, for video games, you know, PlayStation 2, Xbox 360, games like that, you know, that you pay a set fee. It's like $20 a month, and you can rent unlimited games a month, you know, one at a time. Or I could pay $2 more and rent two at a time, but I barely have enough time to play one at a time, let alone two. So I decided to pick that up because it's a lot easier than, like, Gamefly, which was the thing I had before that, because it took them a week to get your game back and a week to send you the next one. If you're listening, Gamefly, open more distribution stores. Team up with Netflix. I don't care. Do something, because it's ridiculous that it takes a week for me to get a frickin' game.
That's another rant.
But anyways, going back to Blockbuster. So I've been having a really good time with this. I'll run a game for a couple days and play it. And if I beat it, cool. If I don't, you know, and I like it, I put it on my list of stuff to pick up when I have money, which, you know, is 20 years from now. So, you know, I've been doing that for a while, and I decided to pick up and run a game called Call of Duty 2. I'm sure you all know it. On the Xbox 360, it's supposed to be really good. Haven't played it. The third one was okay, but it's story-driven. It sucks. So I picked up the second one. Everything seemed fine. Got it home and was looking at the DVD, and the DVD seemed, well, the little circular part looked fine when I looked at it. So I put the disc in the drive. The drive made this nasty clunking sound. And it said, unreadable disc. So I popped the disc out and realized that it looked fine until I flipped it over and the plastic was cracked on the internal ring that holds the disc in place. And a massive chunk of plastic was missing. Closed my drive door on my Xbox 360. It made that wonderful clunking noise again. Took the disc back after fiddling with my Xbox 360 and realizing it wouldn't read any games anymore. At all. So I took the game back, and the response was, we're terribly sorry that we broke your $400 piece of electronics. Here's a rebate on the game that you rented, $8.56. Here's our customer service number. They'll help you deal with the Xbox 360 problem. And if that doesn't work, here's the corporate office to call them. So first things first.
So the store did their part.
Yeah, the store did their part. The store's fine. I don't have any problems with the store. Actually, after I got my Xbox 360 fixed, I went back and I rented another game.
This is the buck passing?
Okay. Yeah. No, they did what they could. All they can do is reimburse the cost of the
Every
rental.
Corporation and has to pass the buck up, Ethan.
Yeah. So, I you know, I called Microsoft the next day, and thankfully my Xbox 360 is still under warranty. I did the extended 2-year warranty. Micro Center just actually swapped out the machine. Gave me a hard drive.
Oh, that's cool.
And just put it on. Fine, no problem there. But I called Blockbuster's customer service office, and I explained what happened. And the first words out of their mouth was, we don't have to do anything with that because it's in your terms of service agreement that you agreed to when you decided to use that service. I said, well, I wasn't handed any paperwork. They went, oh, it's on the internet. Here's my problem. How many people in the United States have internet access? About 84 million. About 35 million of those have high-speed internet access. Okay, I have high-speed internet access. We get 7 megabits per second. It takes 45 seconds to load the Blockbuster page because they have very slow service. On top of that, to get to the page that actually talks about the gaming, the total access pass for the gaming, it's 3 pages buried deep. If you're waiting 45 seconds on high-speed, you're going to go somewhere else. 1. 2. People are known, and this was a study that was done in some science magazine, for each additional click that people have to go through to get to the information they want, the odds that, or the percentage of people that actually will click drops exponentially. 1 click, it's about 80%. 2 clicks, it's about 30%. 3 or more clicks, and it drops into the 10% range. So people aren't knowing, aren't finding out what they need to know, one, because they're not being given the information when they actually agree to it, sign up to it, at the store, which the store should have that information on hand. 2, the information is hidden in a spot that most people won't get to because no one has the patience anymore. Thanks to the environment that places like movies and, you know, instant gratification has provided us with. So my problem is then I was like, all right, fine. You guys don't want to deal with it? I'll go up to the corporate chain. Told the same thing. Now, all I got to do was talk to a secretary. Didn't even get to talk to someone in, like, you know, a claims department. Just a secretary. They wouldn't even forward me to a claims department.
They're actually receptionists.
It's a receptionist. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a sacrilege.
Wow, they're whatever.
Got to be politically correct here.
Oh, like, I'm doing a rant, like I have to be freaking politically correct.
And maybe somebody will correct the receptionist part.
Yeah, I'm sure they have some new name. It's like flight attendants.
Desk attendants.
Desk attendants, yes. They're desk attendants now.
I thought they were specialists.
My problem, yeah, they're desk specialists, sorry. It's like me. I'm an IT lackey. What's my title? Computer support specialist. Or, I'm sorry, system support specialist, because I do more than clean computers. I do phones, too. But, anyways, that's another rant. My problem is if we're going to have to be dealing with this sort of crap, they need to give us this information up front. That way, you know, the poor people at the store, and it wasn't their fault. I mean, you know, they checked the discs. But these cracks were so minute, it was hard for me to see it. And, you know, I look at this type of stuff all the time. But the people at the stores are the ones that are going to get the brunt of this crap. Not the customer service, not corporate, the people at the store who have no control over what's going on. They can't do anything. You know, they are not obligated to. Most of these stores are franchises in the first place. You know, they don't have the money. 90% of the money they make goes back to corporate headquarters for using the name Blockbuster, which I think is crap. But they don't have the ability to do anything. They can't. They don't have the rights or the capabilities. They're not given those. And they're the ones that are going to get stuck with all the people coming in and screaming and suing. It's not the store's fault. Corporate needs to step up, give out the information, make sure it's available for when people do this stuff. Otherwise, you know, Blockbuster's going to go down in a flaming ball of fire. As Jeremy puts it, they're like the 2-cent whore that overcharges you and wears the fake fur coat.
So what Nathan's saying is, please send Jeremy a Xbox 360, because his is already fixed and I don't have one.
I don't want one, so I'm good.
Yeah, he just comes over and plays Gears of War on mine.
Yeah. I mooch off of friends. It's great.
We've got character.
Today's character comes from my original D&D campaign. A character that I pulled out of my nether regions for an adventure that I needed just something there.
You store people in your nether region?
It's crazy.
Yeah,
that's creepy. Hey, you do it too. You pull characters out of there all the time.
I have a pouch. It's different.
Okay, fine. You're marsupial. I'm not.
Are you an egg-laying monotreme?
Sometimes.
Whoa.
When the mood hits me right.
Anyway. This.
Love is in the air.
Everywhere I look around.
So, anyway, this character.
This character I have, I pulled him out of my buttocks for an adventure. Just sort of needed him on the fly. And he ended up becoming a rather prominent character in the game and ended up being the main villain of the first campaign altogether. He was a pit fiend named Fareed. Fareed sort of took shape when a druidic character we had melded into this magical stone, passed through it, and ended up hanging within this black void that had all these crazy monsters locked in it, including the Tarrasque and various other nasty creatures, and a man in a stovepipe hat playing poker.
Really?
Then there was also a pit fiend there that spotted him and went towards him as this druid was scrambling to get out and crawling back up to the stone. This pit fiend grabbed a hold of his foot. Well, the druid character figured he got out just fine, but little did he know he allowed this pit fiend named Fareed to escape from this prison. So, flash forward several game sessions, and the characters are getting their butts handed to them by an NPC, basically an NPC militia captain that was evil and was just smoking them horribly. So it decided that this guy was, this devil was going to pop in and do his little benefactor a favor because he got him out of this prison. So he did this by horribly murdering and killing this gentleman, chopping him into pieces and doing various nasty things to him, because he's a pit fiend after
all. At least he paid him back.
Well, this was only part of the paying back. I'll get to the rest here.
Great. Yeah.
The later on, this druid figures out that this pit fiend is following him around, wanting to repay him for his generosity in getting him out of prison. Whereas some people would be happy to have a being of ultimate power have been in their debt, this was a pit fiend that was probably one of the most twisted pit fiends. That's why it was locked up. So I determined, well, this guy said, this druid character said, hey, you know, I just want you to leave me alone. And this pit fiend basically made it obvious. It's like, okay, I'm going to repay you for helping me. I'm going to do something big for you. So, tell you what, if you go get me this item and give it to me, I will leave you alone. I will stop harassing you in all ways, shapes, and forms.
He's already bargaining with him?
And the character went, okay, that's fine. And so the pit fiend said, okay, and a contract appeared.
Stupid.
And the druid signed said contract.
Oh my god.
Now I actually printed out this contract and typed it up and everything so he could read it first. And he still signed it. I could probably dig it out and maybe scan it, put it on the website. I think I still have it somewhere.
If you have it, scan it, put it on the website.
Any of my first level characters would be like, no!
No! So this character goes off and finds this item, which is on the desk of this high priest in a floating citadel. Now this high priest gives it to him, says, well, if you need it for your faith, here you go.
Oh my god, I didn't hear this story.
Yeah.
So this character, there's more to it, that this character did some other things, but this isn't about this. Anyway, this character gets the item, and then later that evening, the party's camping. He calls upon this, he's going to go off into the woods and call upon this pit fiend. Well, the pit fiend doesn't really want to wait, so he just appears in the campfire. Steps out, paralyzes everyone except for this character. So meanwhile, the paladin and the fighter are like itching to kill big, nasty, evil thing. So the pit fiend in front of everyone.
Question, real quick. Uh-huh. Did the party know about the pit fiend?
No.
No.
This was all privately between me and the
player.
So
now they're seeing this pit fiend.
This pit fiend appears off, goes up, talks to the character, says, do you have what I've asked for?
Oh my god.
And the guy hands him this little music box, basically. And the pit fiend goes, excellent, opens it up, this little music tune plays, and this little energy light flies out. And the pit fiend closes the box, and closes the box, tosses it in the fire. He goes, okay, that's all I needed from that. It's been nice knowing you. Disappears. Everyone goes back to being unfrozen, and of course.
And they didn't lynch him?
They were about to when the druid suddenly cried out in agony as all of his powers were ripped away. Because what happened was this item that he got for this pit fiend Farid was a godly wish spell that actually replaced the god of the druid, which was Alona, with the pit fiend. He took her place. And Alona, in an effort to save this druid from this horrible evil that was going to happen, ripped her power from him. It was the last action she did.
So nice of her.
Yes. It was her sacrifice. And Alona was killed by the pit fiend Farid. And the pit fiend Farid became the new god of the wilderness.
I hope burns in Farid's hell forever.
So after that, the forests became nasty, dark, horrible places that people don't go into because you go in there and you get eaten by vicious tree monsters. this character goes on a quest to try to, you know, regain his powers and to destroy Farid. He ultimately fails.
And the
other characters end up helping Farid kill Farid's own children in order to basically regain balance. And Farid goes on with his existence, godly existence, and the characters go on with theirs. The druid character does become his little dog on a leash. Kind of funny. Anyway, fast forward several millennia, Farid has systematically killed the other two gods of the wilderness and taken their power because he doesn't like sharing. And now is one of the primal gods of nature, along with the other primal gods like Goddess of the Sun, you know, etc., etc., etc. During the course of the second campaign, Farid went on to, during this god war that's going on, told the characters to go ahead and, you know, he'll join their side if they go get him this one item from this temple in hell. Well, the characters go and get this item. It is a medallion with 1,000 hands on it.
In this case, though, we knew what we were doing, and we didn't really want to, but we didn't have a choice.
You didn't know it was what it was, though. You know it was bad.
That
you didn't know how bad.
Did not matter.
You took the medallion, you gave it to Fareed, and Fareed goes, okay, well now I can control the Hecaton Keras.
Exactly. We didn't know that portion, but we knew as soon as anything we did for him was going to turn out bad.
And so he went onto their side, and the good gods, not really even good gods, but
the
old gods won the war because the Hecaton Keras were on their side, as was Fareed, one of the primal gods. Anyway, Fareed is now an uber-powerful deity. And has control of the Hecaton Keras. The forests are dangerous, nasty places you don't want to be. And probably in the next campaign, the character's going to be dealing with trying to take Fareed out at some point. But who knows what will happen there. But it's a character that went on from entirely I randomly needed him, and he evolved into a great NPC that I think everyone loves. So... that's it.
Hates.
Loves to hate. Or hates to love. Depends on how you want to look at it.
From the nether regions comes a great god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I still have the contract.
That's messed
up. Yeah, you should see if you have it.
The review.
And last but not least, Jeremy's going to give us a review.
I'm going to review actually an older game called Sid Meier's Pirates for the PC.
No. Is this the original Sid Meier's Pirates that came out in the 1980s or the remake?
No, I have no idea. I never played the original one. All I know is on this one, on the original one, were you one individual captain who had a ship?
Yeah, it came out in 1989. Does this one come out recently? Has it got 3D graphics?
It's the recent one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the remake.
Great game. Basically, you are the young son of a family who is actually... The family is goes into debt with an evil individual, and he then enslaves your whole family. You're able to run away. And... You find out your family has been shipped to the New World, and you have to choose if you're going to be the Spanish, the English, or the Dutch. You take a ship, and as you're going to the New World, the captain of that ship is very cruel. He's hurting his crew, he's causing all these problems, threatening to murder people. So you take over the ship, kill the captain, become the captain of the ship, and you spend the rest of your time, and it's very open. Now, yes, you can only go around the Caribbean area. That includes parts of Mexico and Florida. But it's very free-flowing. Your character does level up in some ways. You can get different weapons. You can get different amulets, things like that. But they're all boat-based. They're all pirate-based. Now, you can either follow the storyline and hunt down this evil leader's henchmen and find your family members, or you can just try to become the best pirate ever. And you can join up with the different groups like the English, the French, the Spanish, or the Dutch. And depending on who you help, you gain rank and land with the different people. The game is great because it has the top 10 most famous pirates, and you can actually hunt them down. And the ship combat's very neat. You control your ship. The one thing I didn't like is you couldn't control multiple ships at a time. They're basically there just for support.
You could switch ships.
You could switch ships, but not really in combat. That was a complaint. But you had different types of combat. Your combat was either you could use your cannons with normal shot, chain shot, or grape shot. Or you could actually attack the ship. And you can sword fight. And the sword fighting is really funny, really fun. It's very easy. It's all based on timing and hitting the keys right. Also, for social things, you can meet the governor's daughters. And you
dance.
Do special things for them. And you can dance. I never liked that part. It's too hard. But it does increase your social rating. The game is a lot of fun. It's very simple. It's probably about $9.99 now.
No, it's still
$30. I bet you can find it cheaper elsewhere.
It's worth $30, though.
But I bet if you go down to a half-off game store someplace like that, you'd be able to find it, a used copy or something. Sid Meier's Pirates, great game, came out recently. Kind of cartoonish. Doesn't hurt
it's
the gameplay at all.
Platform.
So I recommend it. Give it a try. Nice video game.
I've never played it, so.
You should.
I hear it's awesome.
It's fun.
It is. Even
and what's great is you can run it on a very low-end machine, too.
Yeah, yeah, anything to basically run it. And also, they do actually have a, I think, a either a PS2 or an Xbox
version. They have an Xbox version, but I don't think they have a PS2 version. And that concludes our three-parter.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women. That is good. That is good.
Ah, welcome, welcome. Come on in, please, please. Have a seat, warm yourself by the fire, and listen to the friendly minstrel's song. What? You've come seeking the tome? Well, you are in luck. I am the keeper of the tome. And what would you do with this mighty podcast? Oh, good, good. You have the right idea. You see, the tome is a source for expanding your understanding of Dungeons and Dragons and what various books have to offer. The tome's knowledge is endless when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons. So sit, listen, and become a sage of great renown. The Tome is a Dungeons & Dragons review podcast focused on official content. You can find The Tome at http://thetome.podbean.com or search for The Tome on iTunes.
I am Paul Blücher.
Well, we're back with wonderful random encounters today. And we've got a good stack that I've let pile up for a while, so a lot of things we need to talk about real quick, just sort of the state of the gaming industry. And
first, we should make an announcement.
Some various things. But yeah, we have two announcements real quick. First of all, we actually have authentic email addresses now. I am Ethan at CanadianCrusaders.com, which is E-T-H-A-N. Nathan has his own. It's obviously Nathan,
which is N-A-T-H-A-N,
at CanadianCrusaders.com. And then Jeremy, of course, is Jeremy.
J-E-R-E-M-Y.
At CanadianCrusaders.com. So if you want to email us, you can email us at those places. Or if you really want to, you can just keep emailing us at thethousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. Although that's a lot to type out. But there's that. Second thing is, since we're horribly shameless and we like pimping ourselves out as much as possible.
We're self-promoters, so what can
we
say?
Yeah, we are, really. We've opened up a cafe press store where you can go buy Canadian Crusaders and Gamers Haven merchandise. And I'll iterate that we don't get any money from this, so if you go buy stuff, we don't see a cent. It all goes to cafe press. But it's a place where you can go buy a nice Canadian t-shirt or Canadian hat or... you know, be it your own Canadian Crusader. Or you can go buy various DICE logo shirts or Gamers Haven shirts and polo shirts and dice boxes and dice clocks and weird things like that. But check it out. If you look on our website, on the left-hand side of our website, on the toolbar, there is a button called Stuff, Cafe Press. Click on that. That'll take you right there. Or go to www.cafepress.com/ghpodcast. Obviously, links are in the show notes.
We'll try to put the burning car into the cafe press if possible.
Yes. Well, it's not burning, it's burnt.
The burnt car.
The burnt
car. It was at one point burning.
Yes. At one point it was burning.
And with I think Ethan's quote's the best one. How in the world did that get here?
Yeah. Don't know. It's a strange thing.
It wasn't on fire in front of your apartment, otherwise you would have heard the fire engine.
Went to sleep, it wasn't there. Woke up, it was there. It was very
strange. Ben, Anthony, and Andrew, though, saw some hoodlums, like, wandering about, though. So maybe they caught something on fire and then...
Don't know. Still would have thought I would have heard something if, like, the rending of metal and whatnot. But anyway. First up, we have a just something I want to give some feedback on from the forums from our friend the Pantsless Jedi.
Still didn't find those pants.
He needs those pants, man.
We should make another announcement.
Okay.
Well, for those of you out there that go to Gen Con every year, just for the heads up, Ethan and I and my wife will actually be there this year again, like we've been for the past how many years now?
Oh, this is year 11 for me, year 10 for you. I
think. Year 10 for me, year 11 for you. Yeah, we've been going for a while, but we're going to be there this year.
Becca's only been there
five
times.
She's been there ever since she's been dating me, so five times. This will be her fifth time.
And we don't like Jeremy, so he doesn't get to go.
No, I've only been once, but I went to good old
Milwaukee,
which was awesome.
Yeah, Indianapolis is even better.
Milwaukee.
The place is huge, but Milwaukee.
You need to drag Robin along one year.
Yeah. It takes, money. So please, send money.
Send money. There we go.
Yeah, if you send money for Jeremy to go, maybe we can get him to come too. And then everybody who listens to our podcast, I don't know how many we have.
And I'm sure there's a big podcasting party that's been organized by Peter Atkinson for meet and greet from fans and whatnot. But I don't know if we're going to be able to go to that or whatever. If we are, we'll be there. If we're not, whatever.
If not, you'll be outside tapping on the windows going, let us in, we do a podcast.
No, I've already got us an invite, but it's on Saturday night. So
you guys leave.
And we've already
Sunday.
Got, we're leaving Sunday, plus I might have a game. So, because I'm going to Gen Con on vacation and I want to play games.
Yeah, anyway. That doesn't mean that if you guys actually run into us that we won't stop and talk shop.
Well, hopefully before then we'll actually get around and maybe Nathan and I can order some shirts and actually wear some Gamers Haven shirts
some
at Gen Con.
Know who we are.
So look around for us, the Gamers Haven logos, and we'll see it. I'm actually planning on having some business cards out, and the Pulp Gamer crew might actually have is going to have a booth there, and they're going to have business cards and flyers for a bunch of different podcasts, and one of ours is going to be there, hopefully.
You can dress up like Cthulhu and run around the hallway.
No, there's enough people doing that already.
Yeah, you can just blend in with everybody else.
Yeah. But anyway, our friend the Pantsless Jedi.
Still no pants, dude.
Dude, you need pants.
You really need pants.
I mean, are you wearing a muumuu? I mean, come on, wear pants.
At least
pants.
Get a kilt.
A kilt would work. You need a kilted Jedi.
The Force doesn't cover up your parts.
No, and those robes are open in the front, so it's just wrong. You need pants, man. Please. Anyway, the Pantsless Jedi said this on the forums. Have you ran any games that are just off the wall, nutty, or downright insane? Then he mentions, obviously, Munchkin and the Ninja Burger games from Steve Jackson Games. Now, yes, we have run some nutty off-the-wall games, not just in the typical ones. My personal favorite is always Paranoia XP, the only good game published by Mongoose Publishing.
Mandatory.
Upgrades are mandatory.
You run your April Fool's game once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I try to run a Christmas one with cannibalistic elves and reindeer.
And
run
my Halloween.
And run a Halloween. So I think a lot of the fun ones are within established games, but there's so many cheap-ass games.
There's Tune from Steve Jackson. I think Steve Jackson puts that out.
Kill Dr. Lucky Deluxe.
Kill Dr. Lucky. Anything from cheap-ass games is generally a hoot. The Totally Renamed Spy game. I mean, you got card games and role-playing stuff that are just great.
Killer Bunnies. We've played Killer
Cosmic
Bunnies.
Cows.
If you can find
Monkey
it,
Arena.
Scavenger Hunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scavenger Hunt's a great one.
Off-the-wall game that, actually, that board game that we played where one person is the traitor.
Oh, the
House
Betrayal of House on the Hill.
Yes.
That's a great game.
Off-the-wall, a lot of fun.
Great game. An out-of-print game, but a great game. You can still find it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could take an established game and run around. We had somebody who packed himself up with nitroglycerin, and when he was shot in the sewer, the whole town went up.
Yep, that was
interesting. Stuff like that.
That was in a Palladium system game.
Then we also have, guy who straps dynamite to him and runs out and gets killed in a Deadlands game. Thankfully ending a bad campaign.
I was quite happy to have that thankfully ending.
Yes, thank you. I thank you for ending that campaign.
Because I was so pissed.
Oh, I wasn't having a good time either, so.
They wanted to stop adventuring and build a brothel or something?
Yeah, it was not. It was dumb. Two out of those three people are gone. Well, actually, it was only those two that did it.
It was only those two.
They just need to die.
The rest of us were,
anyway.
The rest of us wanted to actually
carried along,
play.
And we were pissed.
But the second campaign was much better. is much better. We'll be getting back to that soon.
But yeah, there's tons of fun,
crazy
games out there, or take an established one and make it crazy.
And if you've heard of any, post it on the forums, drop us an email, any of that stuff.
We
want to hear about that stuff, because we love we love the off-the-wall crazy games sometimes.
And maybe you should adventure for some pants.
Yeah. I mean, you can buy pants online, man, and have them delivered, please. But that way you don't even have to go out.
But you can adventure for him, too, if you want.
That's true, but he might get arrested without pants.
I will not be arrested. I am wearing pants. I have a Jedi mind trick.
Dude, we're not in Australia.
That's true, we're not.
All right. The next bit of random encounter I have is something from Gary Barrett.
Which I gotta say, this is very interesting. I thank you for this.
Yes, he just listened to episodes 17 and 18 of Gamer's Haven and thought we might be interested to know that the second edition Deities and Demigods is actually available as a free download from Wizards. It's a rich text document, so it's just text, mind you, called Legends and Lore, and this is also a PDF on Paizo, I believe. It's available in the Downloads Old Edition Downloads section, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's near the bottom of the list of the page in the rules section. If you look in Wikipedia, he also pointed out, you'll find that it was renamed Legends and Lore in 6th edition because they did not want to offend fundamental Christians.
That is so awesome!
And obviously now it's back to being deities and demigods. Perhaps, and he says here, as it's back to being deities and demigods for 3rd edition, perhaps they now want to offend fundamental Christians. Hope you finally see a soul. The Legends and Lore RTF document is less than 1 meg, and it's free. So
that
the right price.
So cool.
Anyway, his screen name is The Pagan, so I think that fits. But we thank you, Gary, for dropping us a line.
Yeah,
that's
giving
awesome.
Us that information and making me laugh, because that is a lot of... That's really funny.
Yes.
That's funny.
All right.
that was great.
Another piece of feedback we got was from Steve Irwin Davidson. Said, great show, guys. I've finished getting caught up to date listening to the old podcasts.
Cool, thanks.
I was wondering what your thoughts were on L5R, which is The Legend of the Five Rings, and its D20 version, Oriental Adventures, by James Wyatt. I'm also a big fan of the Asian genre in general, as well as horror and Call of Cthulhu. I was also wondering what you all thought about mixing and matching concepts from one genre to another. Specifically, I've been prepping an Oriental Adventures game for a while now, and have recently been thinking about adding the sanity system from, presumably from Call of Cthulhu, I would guess, from into Oriental Adventures or Legend of the Five Rings. There are many creatures in Oriental Adventures and the Legend of the Five Rings that conceivably could cause insane moments. I'm especially thinking of encounters with Fu Leng or Penelogan. Your thoughts?
Ghost
Keep up the good work, Steve.
I think that's a great idea. Mixing the Oriental flavor with different rules. You've got the corruption, but the sanity is very good.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
I would definitely.
Didn't they actually publish sanity rules in Unearthed Arcana?
They also published.
Yes,
there's also in the D20 called.
Oh no, it's or is it in the horror Heroes of Horror?
Heroes of Horror has it.
Heroes
also,
of Horror has the sanity rules actually published specifically for
D&D.
The Call of Cthulhu book for D20 has.
Yeah,
rules
but
on
the problem with that is that book's out of print.
Oh.
Yeah,
Heroes of Horror is still in print. You could find that.
Cool.
If you can find the Call of Cthulhu D20 anywhere, pick it up, because it's hard to find now.
The mixing is
a book.
Great.
No, it's not. It's
and
a good
actually,
book.
It's really interesting to have an Oriental culture adventuring with a Eastern Europe.
And I've run, I ran, I believe it was second edition Legend of the Five Rings. It wasn't D20, and it was a lot of fun.
And I've played it.
I've Oriental Adventures numerous times in my
Oriental
D&D game. It's a
Adventures,
good book.
It's a very good game.
It's a beautiful book, good book, and I love, I'm a sucker for Chinese and Japanese history, so.
Yeah. One thing I would be careful with in Legends of the Five Ring, make sure you explain to your players what type of game, and also allow them. Don't be too harsh when they don't understand how the culture functions.
Right.
Things like
expect some culture
expect
shock.
Culture shock, and then I'll help them along, because, for example, not being allowed to carry weapons is sometimes foreign when you're thinking about gaming. Or the differences between a samurai and a peasant. That sometimes it takes a little bit of time for, because you might not be a samurai adventurer, you might be a peasant adventurer, and that gets you in a lot of trouble.
Right.
And that needs to be discussed. So they know what the proper etiquette is.
It's definitely something to look at if you're wanting to add a bit some flavor to your game. Yeah.
Also with the Legend of the Five Rings, be sure to note to them that just because their character might be a good person who's a ninja, no one else is going to see that good person when they see ninja.
Yeah.
Ninjas are assassins.
Morality is something that differs by culture a lot of times and society, and that's something I would definitely touch upon just to explain to your players and help them. I mean, if they have the skills to do it on their character sheet, they may not understand as a player because a lot of us focus on Eastern Europe.
And that's the culture we most easily recognize.
How you treat an Eastern Europe ruler is completely different than an Asian
ruler.
Asian rulers were viewed as gods.
Definitely, Legend of the Five Rings is a good system. Third edition is out, and it's back to its original base system with that.
The D20's not bad.
But the D20 version isn't bad at all. And a lot of the supplement books that I believe it's Ulrich Entertainment Group put out that game, that they did for it are actually quite good. There are some that are okay, but like Magic or Rokugan, very nice book.
Yeah.
It's some good stuff.
All the different houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm. The clans, all that stuff. It's good stuff.
And the monsters. I love
it's
the Oriental monsters.
It's definitely one of the richest games in there. If you like the Japanese-Chinese thing, there is another game system out there that came out called Qin, The Warring States. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. And I have the book. It's a beautiful book. It's just a good read because it's very historical.
I do like
it. And it's more about China.
The corruption system they use. They don't
The taint?
Yeah, the taint. They don't really have to. You don't have to have alignment. You can just say, well, there's not alignment. You're just a person. But there's taint or corruption.
Right.
And these creatures cause taint, the tainted lands.
Yeah.
And I'd
recommend if you're putting it into a D&D campaign, check out Heroes of Horror because it has a lot of rules for that stuff.
Heroes of Horror has a lot of good stuff. If you have the old school D20 Cthulhu book, use that too.
Yeah.
That was very effective. I actually implemented that in a couple of times.
But,
And also, maybe just use your sanity rules on a case by case basis. It doesn't necessarily have to be a complete changeover. You could just use it once in a while and it should be fine. So that's some good. That's some good feedback there.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Well, now we're getting on to some information as far as just some interesting bits that have been going on.
I think the first one there, Ethan and I saw together. I'm not sure.
Yes.
Is that the D&D
Dungeon and Dragon magazine?
Yeah. The conversation with the. Is that the one that ended the conversation with the extra person that works with?
No.
No, okay. That's something.
That's on EN World.
Okay.
But everyone knows what's going on. Paizo Publishing announced that come the September issue, or basically come Gen Con, Dragon and Dungeon Magazine will no longer be in print. Now,
Through Paizo.
Well, no. Here's the official word. It says, Wizards of the Coast will be moving to a kind of content currently found in Dragon and Dungeon to an online model. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, WotC's being very quiet about this, and I think that's a smart thing for WotC to do. They're letting Paizo sort of do their thing and get their information out for Pathfinder, their new magazine.
Which may be a good magazine.
Yeah, it might be cool.
I'd probably pick up the first one just to check it out.
Yeah. But they're being very quiet as to what they want to do, because I think they're probably going to make a bigger announcement as far as their online content, because they've already going to be putting out a... they've already taken back their character creation tools and stuff like that. I'm thinking they're going to be having something to do with that.
I hope they put a good tool out.
But they might be having a big bundle of information that they'll be put out with different aspects, like with dragon material, dungeon material, character creator, mapping tools, things like that.
If it's pricey, if it's good, though, it might be
If they do it well, it's going to be awesome. But they're being very quiet about what they're doing, and I think that's the right thing for them to do, is to sort of let everyone simmer down, you know. The fact that Dragon and Dungeon Magazine are going away as in the form that we know them, I think, isn't a bad thing.
But it is kind of sad for them.
It's sad to see them go just because they're staples. They've been around forever.
They have a lot of fun information in them.
Yeah, but there are some people basically akinning this to being raped right now, and I think that's just pathetic for people to be saying this.
It's not that big of a change.
No, it's just a magazine, people. Chill out. But
they're still going to have another one out. It's not
And Pathfinder may very well,
it might be an awesome magazine. We don't know. Give it a chance, you know. But as far as...
We don't know yet, because we haven't seen it.
Right, exactly. We don't know much.
The online version might be good, too.
We don't know what they're going to do with this online content. So I'm saying, before you jump to conclusions,
wait until it all comes in.
Not to mention, they actually have printed, Paizo has put out the collections. They're starting to put out the collections.
They put out the Dragon Compendium Volume 1, which is really cool, and I intend to buy that.
Kind of pricey, but
it's cool. About $40.
Yeah,
it's $40 or $50.
But it does.
It's a good book, though. I intend to pick it up, and it says Volume One, so I'd assume they're probably going to do another collection,
they
probably after they
to.
Cease publication.
There's not enough stuff in that one book. There's not enough room.
Oh yeah, but it's good. I would recommend picking that stuff up. It's good stuff. But it's interesting to see where they're going to go with it. Honestly, I'm sort of excited to see what they do. Because they could either shoot themselves in the foot, or it could be a good thing.
And I like what that article said. That one gentleman who was writing from Wizards on Ian World, I like how he said that Hasbro stayed out of the day-to-day. That actually makes me feel good.
Yeah,
I like to know that Hasbro just wants to know about the numbers and lets the company Wizards do their own gaming stuff.
Right. Which is nice. But more on the WotC front... WotC actually, right now, this is sort of in the conjecture phase because we've got two different things going on, is Margaret Weiss Productions announced that Wizards of the Coast is not renewing the Dragonlance license to them. I believe the exact quote, let's see here, that their agreement has come to term and is not being renewed. That's what... Margaret Weiss Productions has said. But the thing is, Wizards of the Coast haven't announced anything official yet. The only thing they have said that is that negotiations are still going on, and that no decisions have been made. But it seems that Margaret Weiss Productions might just be out of the loop.
So their movie might be out.
The animated movie's going to happen. That's fine. But as far as more gaming books for Dragonlance, either...
Dragon of the Autumn Twilight. The Dragons of the Twilight.
Yeah, the first one.
Have you played that game? That role-playing campaign? Is
Dragonlance?
Hard.
Is it? I read the books. The books were great.
But
when I was a kid, they were...
Dragonlance, this means a few different things. Obviously, either Margaret Weiss Productions isn't going to be publishing the Dragonlance books anymore, and a different company is.
Or
Wizards of the Coast is going to do what they did with Ravenloft,
yeah.
Which is just take it back in-house and put out a supplement for it, like they did with Expedition to Castle Ravenloft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see what they do with it.
A lot
of people are using the conjecture saying, well, this is a prelude to 4th edition, they're getting all their stuff back. But if you look at it from a business sense, that's not what WotC's doing. WotC's already announced their production slate for the next year and a half.
Yeah.
And it would be stupid of them to say, oh, hey, 4th edition now, because so many people got burned on the 3.5 revision.
Yes.
And
a lot of anger.
They're not gonna jeopardize a year and a half worth of product to put out a 4th edition now. We're still years away from a 4th edition, in my opinion. It's not something that they're going to do.
I would say we're at least 2 years out from the 4th edition.
I hope.
But also keep in mind, if they announce the 4th edition, they're going to announce it a year ahead of time like they did for 3.0.
I just hope they don't, or I hope they don't make it into a stupid 2nd edition, what was it, points and, it was a point system that ruined everything.
Skills and powers?
Skills and powers.
Not cool at all, but I'll put links in the notes to... The two articles about the Dragonlance license and the original when they took back the Ravenloft license or let it sort of revert back.
Which, you know, maybe they'll start printing stuff on. I hope they do Planescape. That would be cool.
Yeah, so far no word on that. Planescape's still being handled by Planewalker.com or Planewalker.org.
Which is fine. Their work is fine. But
and I haven't checked the Dark Sun site, but, you know, they actually publish stuff for free. So
I kind of doubt they'll spread the words too much.
Yeah.
Maybe Eberron will catch on fire or something.
Oh, yeah, maybe that'll crash
their
and
world will,
like it should.
That series is not selling very well.
It's a stupid series.
All the gamers that went to publish the... try to get their worlds published, after that came out, you know, someone who had already been published got published again for that, people were just so furious
that
they didn't want anything
not,
to do with it.
Eberron is just... It's just Iron Kingdoms. And it's not even a good Iron Kingdoms. It's just kind of there.
Everything
it has good aspects.
Yeah, there are aspects of Eberron that
are
good, but I hate it, most of all.
I baited the online D&D game that's built around it, and it was atrocious. You're missing like half the races that make D&D D&D.
Exactly. No dwarves, elves, and all that stuff. Come on.
And we could have just had
there
Iron
was
Kingdoms.
Elves, but there were
no
dwarves. There was like these rock people, which were goofy. There were no orcs, no half-orcs. And it's like, I don't know if they're available in the system because I won't pick up the system. I don't like the way the books look.
It should have just been one book. I mean,
yeah.
It should have just been one.
Not a series.
Maybe a different.
I think that's just a big mistake.
And basically, that whole
for WotC,
contest
honestly.
Was kind of
that,
weird anyway.
That contest was a sham.
It was messed up. I was not happy about that.
And
I'm glad I didn't send anything in on it, you know, honestly.
Well, I sent something in, but I knew it wasn't good enough to go anywhere, but that wasn't the point.
But the point was just send it in. Moving on. The last two things I want to talk about are just some general announcements from two different companies. Have you guys ever read the Song of Fire and Ice?
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it yet.
George R.R. Martin? Green Ronin has inked a deal to produce a RPG based on, or an RPG supplement based on the Song of Fire and Ice.
Really?
And the only reason I mention that is because it's Green Ronin, and, well, we have to mention them at least once in an episode. Because and I guess we're contractually obligated.
Yeah, Green Ronin, if you're out there listening,
we love you.
Yeah, you can send us free stuff. We'll review it.
In other words, what they're saying is we think your Mutants and Masterminds series books were just the bomb. And that I saw at the bookstore the other day that they had the Egyptian Adventures Hamunaptra. And Ethan pointed out to me that the only way you guys are actually going to make money off that is if I buy it directly from you. So I guess I have to order that online sometime soon.
Or just buy it at Gen Con.
Or buy it at Gen Con, you know, if I can wait that long. I think I can be patient. It's only 3 months away.
Yeah.
Is that the whole box set one?
Yeah.
I have read Ethan's. It's a lot of good. Yeah.
It's
they
very cool.
No money off of it when it went to publishing because of that whole...
Yeah, because a distributor ran out on them, basically.
Yeah, that's
but
messed up.
Green Ronin's going to publish...
We're going to track them down and gut them like fish.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But Green Ronin's going to publish a Song of Fire and Ice, sort of similar to how they did with Thieves World books and
awesome.
The Black Company and...
Black Company books were good.
Well, there's only one Black Company book.
As a source
I'm
book.
I'm talking
like
about
the books.
No, the books, right.
It's a good source book.
It's a very good source book.
I haven't read the source book.
They only have the license to do one book for it, so they put as much as possible
when
into
Green
that
Ronin
book. And it's a really good book.
I mean, I'm not saying Green Ronin doesn't have a few just, like, craptastic things.
Oh, yeah, Green Ronin
but
does.
When they put their mind to it...
They put out good stuff.
They do.
It's not like the shotgun. They don't do the shotgun scatter.
They don't do the mongoose thing.
You're going to have bad books. I mean, look at Wizards of the Coast. They've got tons of bad
books.
Jesus God.
But when you think of how many books they put out, too.
Yeah. Green Ronin is more careful. They're just like, we'll put out occasional one
here. I hearken Green Ronin to like Blizzard and the PC field.
That's
because
true.
When you think about it, Blizzard's done,
their
done
stuff
about
has
30
been pretty
games.
Good. Yeah.
About 30 games. But the thing is they still had several games that sucked. Like they did Blackthorn. That game was not very good. They did a couple other games. They did, but then of course they did things like Lost Vikings. And
Lost
Vikings
awesome.
2. And
great
of course,
games.
The Diablo and StarCraft and Warcraft series.
And then WoW.
And,
yeah, but Green Ronin does great stuff, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that. As far as I understand, also, HBO is going to do a miniseries based on Song of Fire and Ice as well.
Sweet.
So I need to track down the audiobooks for those and listen to those
I'll
at some point.
I'll tell you about the WoW thing I saw.
And finally, this is something that just makes us all incredibly happy. Margaret Weiss Productions Limited has reached an agreement with Warner Brothers Television and DC Comics to produce a role-playing game products based on the hit television series Supernatural.
Oh, awesome. Yeah!
We like role-playing games that feature a great mix of character, action, and story, says Margaret Weiss, New York Times best-selling author and game publisher. Supernatural delivers on all three, and the show's premise is perfect for games. Amen to that.
Oh, yeah.
The show is like a new horror movie each week, and now we'll be bringing that experience to the gaming table. Supernatural, of course, is a hit television series that airs on Thursdays on the CW network and is produced by Warner Brothers Television in association with Wonderland South and Vision, with executive producers Mick G from Charlie's Angels on the OC, writer, executive producer, and creator Eric Kripke, Robert Singer, Kim Manners, and John Scheiben.
Eric Kripke, who you might recognize from...
Boogeyman, apparently.
Didn't he also do a...
No, David Nutter is also involved in that, and he... In the show, and
he did
Millennium and X-Files. There's a lot of X-Files on here. Kim Manners and John Scheiben are both from the
Nothing
X-Files.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, X-Files was a good show, for the most part.
But Jamie Chambers, author and designer of the best-selling Serenity RPG, is very excited about doing the project. His grandmother, my grandmother raised me on ghost stories, monster tales, and local legends, he says. Supernatural struck an immediate chord with me from the first episode, and I'm a big fan. I want to really bring the feel of the show to our game, including the attention to folklore, a dash of humor, and a classic rock soul. Chambers is leading a team of writers and designers to create a game where players can become hunters of monsters, either taking the role of the show's characters or creating an entirely new monster-slaying group. The role-playing game will offer an exciting game experience as well as serving as a thrilling companion product for fans of the show. The game will make the use of the Cortex system, Rules created for Serenity RPG and the Battlestar Galactica RPG, also produced by Margaret Weiss Productions Limited. And the first product will be a quick start guide, which will provide a preview of the game, including the introductory rules and a short adventure. The next release will be a Supernatural Role-Playing Game Core Book, a self-contained collection of rules and source material that will contain everything a group needs to start playing. Additional products will follow the release of the core product. The entire line will be supported by an interactive website.
Cool.
More information will be released in the near future with further details about the upcoming line of Supernatural role-playing game products. I'll put a link to the show notes to this article and to the Margaret Weiss Productions website, which
isn't
very good.
And a Supernatural.
And a Supernatural. So I'm digging that they're doing a Supernatural RPG. Not that I might not ever run the thing, but I'll definitely pick the book up just because it'll be a good read, I think.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be an excellent book just to have.
Oh yeah, so
because it's Supernatural.
Well,
and
I
Supernatural
need to pick
just
up Serenity
absolutely
too.
Rocks.
I'd like to see their system.
System's supposed to be fairly
I have,
well done.
I have the Serenity RPG. So you borrowed any?
Well, I don't.
Food
have
on
it,
YouTube.
So.
Yeah, I can. You want to throw down? It might be able to get Paulina the Mentita out here.
And sad news, I tried to go and buy a copy of the Secrets of Kenya book on Friday, and it was sold out.
Sad. Well, that's a good thing, technically.
For you, maybe.
Well, for Chaosium, maybe. I didn't buy it.
Yeah. Well, apparently, when we were in Lawrence yesterday, I went over there to the
crappy game store?
Yeah. Which one? He'd ordered Hometown. I won't go to the Goblin Games one. I don't want to burn it down.
You don't want to get sick from mold or
anything.
At
least the poor guy that's behind the desk at Hometown is actually a nice guy.
Mike? Yeah, Mike's a nice
guy.
He's
a very nice guy.
He's just a crappy store.
He wishes he could buy it. He could afford a larger store. He just can't.
Their hours are weird. They have to be short, too, because there's sometimes I drive by and they're not open at all, and it's normal times to be open. So.
No, but if you're in Kansas City, go to Tabletop
Games. Tabletop Games.
Best game store ever.
Yeah, they had like 8 copies of it, and they sold all of them.
Yep.
I was like, so I made sure they ordered one for me.
Yep. They're an awesome store.
But it makes it very hard to make sure that my adventure is ready for when I start up Cthulhu again after we're done with the Mutants and Masterminds game.
Also, anyone out there who is still playing WoW, Nathan and his wife, Becca, unfortunately have ran out of time and stuff and are playing and Warhammer. Ethan is no longer playing. Myself am still playing.
He's still got the track marks.
I still have the track marks.
He's still on the wagon.
I still have the character. I've got a couple different characters.
Now, right?
Level 57, moving to the Outlands pretty soon. So please, feel free to look us up. Our guild is the Legion. A lot of fun. I got to say, there's one other thing that I saw that just makes me laugh. Blizzard has put out a World of Warcraft credit card. And instead of points that you can use for, like, flights, you earn points for free game time.
Oh my god.
Blizzard is so evil, it's awesome.
Oh my god.
This is...
What, 6 million addicted people are going to buy that or going to sign up for that freaking credit card and spend the hell out of what little money they have?
I had
to
say
free
that
time.
I was,
take that credit card and go to their little auction thing and buy gold for the game.
Now, those people I don't like the people that buy gold. I think that's
the people who farm gold need to die.
But I got to say, though, when I saw that credit card, I did check the APR to see if I should transfer over.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the same, so I'm not going to. But I did think about it. I got to say, earning free game time, that's a lot of fun.
Sigh. That's it for our show today.
It's time to get things for the Muppet Show tonight.
All right, then.
That's the next show, obviously.
That's it for our show. Of course, you guys know how to get in touch with us. We have our little pre-recorded bit that I'll probably play about right here. Just so you know. Thanks for listening, guys.
God, the demons are going to eat us. Close the door, Ethan.
Huh? What?
Ah!
Huh.
Whoa.
Going to need another co-host, I guess.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You can visit our website at www.canadiancrusaders.com. You can leave us an audio, call or voicemail line at 206-338-2414. Visit us on the Frapper map, send us an email, or go by the forums on Fistful of Comics, or go to our website and click on the forums link to get to the forums, and leave us a message there, and we'll get back to you absolutely as soon as we can. Thanks for listening. Gamers Haven Podcast is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution share-alike 2.5 license and is a proud member of the Fistful of Comics podcast audio group. And if you swallow the drug, you'll be fast to die. There's a new sheriff in town, but he's all alone. So you're in the dark. Spits a fire. Favorite bullets and blood.
That they said that they would.
I blame Jeremy for everything, so.
I thought you blamed me for everything.
Well, no, I blame you for everything.
I blame Jeremy for everything you blame.
So it's around and around the carousel we go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, at least there's symmetry.
Why does the Castle Grayskull
have big pits?
Have giant pits?
You would have to ask the sorceress about that because it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, see, we can't talk about survival, Darwin's survival here in Kansas, remember?
Oh, that's right. We're in Kansas. Can't talk about Darwin.
We have the spaghetti monster.
We can talk about the spaghetti monster.
Yeah, spaghetti monster. He's cool.
If I have to perform an exorcism on a house, I'll perform an exorcism on a house.
I would hire a priest. Actually, if I came to a house that was that cool, mm-hmm. and they said somebody would die in it, I would pay a priest to come out and bless it.
Bless it.
I watched this movie a long time ago, where this volcano on Hawaii was blowing up. But unlike the normal eruption, it was like eating the whole island.
Yeah,
and they had to get the scientists out.
Out underneath the island.
And they had the scientists, they're getting on a helicopter. And I remember the scene because you have this helicopter that's in some sort of sound studio or something. Uh-huh. And you had the fake mountain behind them. And every once in a while the wind would hit. And they have people holding on to the sides of the helicopter, mm-hmm. like all of the non-scientists, but all like the native helpers. Mm-hmm. It was horribly racist. It was a bad movie. But they would get blown off by the wind, and they would show them plummeting to their death. And they wouldn't die when they hit the ground because it hit from the magma. And then they'd burn to death screaming, and I'm going, I don't know the name of this movie either. It was so horrible. I was like, it was back in junior high. It was on TV. I was like,
that just wasn't a flashback to West Junior High.
Well, with the giant...
Our lives there.
What was that? The giant hallway of blood? The hellhound smells!
Diego.
There are things coming out of him that should not be.
Off.
My apologies. The hellhound decided to come over and give me a greeting.
He tried to fumigate you. The only person in the guild that actually honestly believed me when I said I was a guy was hot. I'm a hot mama. No one else would believe me. Everyone else thought I was a woman. I was like, no, I'm a guy.
Nathan, for the record, you are a hot mama.
And that's why junior high teaches you to survive in the real world.
It's Darwin in action.
If you survive being beaten to death or, I don't know.
Well, that kid didn't make
apparently it's that way in Kansas.
The way I look at it.
All of the magic.
But not in that gay sort of way.
No. Three-parter!
For the three-parter. Discussing the wonderful, extra-dimensional creatures that cats destroy and the supernatural creatures that dogs go after. So, there's you for all pets. What do fish do?
Fish reduce your blood pressure.
They reduce your blood pressure. They also keep Cthulhu from returning.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
They make sure that,
Dagon doesn't come out
of your fish tank. Dagon doesn't come out of your fish tank.
And Riley stays sunken. Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
And I grab. I'm like, I don't think this is
that definitely
happen.
Sounds like a D&D moment. I have more hit points than the moon!
I stayed up way too late.
I don't sleep anyway. It's a fun.
I've been doing so much better since I uninstalled World of Warcraft and City of Heroes. So,
in second edition, if you had enough worshippers, or no, you could be a priest of yourself. You'd only get up to second level spells. Yeah, second level spells.
It frightens me that you know this, Jeremy.
Yeah.